thinking about being out here at Giants camp, and we always get kind of caught up in the euphoria of it and the hopes and the dreams and beliefs. Well, I do. I actually do. But there is one legitimate thing that is truly different about this football team, and it goes from talking to coaches, guys behind the scenes here, and that is that there is legitimately everybody knows what the reality is, and I think Brian knows what the reality is, but they have some really good players.
Yeah, they do. I mean, and when you especially on defense, I think that there's some real firepower on defense, and that if this team is going to win and going to win like 7 or 8 games, it's going to be because they have a top 10 defense.
I would tell you, like, whether it be Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Abdul Carter, Bobby Okereke,
Javon Holland.
I'll put Javon Holland on the list
who
now.
Who joins us in 10 minutes.
Right. We'll put him on the list now, but you got Malik Nabers. I mean, you got Andrew Thomas. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have enough really top-end talent at important positions that, you know, this team should not go 3-13-1. You know what I mean? I mean, this team should be much more competitive. And if Brian Daboll feels like, you know, this is it, like, you know, John Mara's got to see some growth, then the team has got he's got to place the pressure on the team on day one, which I think he has done. So I can understand why there is a genuine optimism around the team, because this, I feel like finally they have Joe Shane's team here.
Yes, for sure. And there's been some great draft picks by this regime, and there's been some bad ones, much like most of the organizations in the NFL. But I think that there's two ways that the Daboll and Shane era continues here. The first is that Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston, most likely Russell Wilson, who starts the entire year, gets them to a point where at the end of the season, they're right there trying to grab a wild card. You know, division, great, but it's going to be tough. You got the best team in the NFL.
It all depends on injuries, too, you know.
Of course, but that's one way. You know, you're competing for a wild card all the way up to the end of the season. You know, you've won some games. You look different. You're a team that's actually taken seriously. That's plan A. The other plan would be that you're a competitive team, but things aren't working out. You're out of it. And then Jackson Dart comes in late in the season and looks like he's got a real future. And then you're like, well, we can't pull the plug on what's going on here with Brian Daboll and Jackson Dart. We got to keep this thing going. And Jackson Dart will start next year and we'll see how it goes. So those are the two ways that it happens.
And I do think that there is as some people would say, and I guess it's the best way to describe it, that the quarterback room, while not, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, not the, you know, Baltimore Ravens, not the Buffalo Bills, it's different. It's different personalities. There is presence there now. Like, there's a real presence of players that are sitting in that room and coming out here and leading the team. And you say whatever you want about Russell Wilson being, you know, guarded, being, you know, not overly excitable. The fact of the matter is he's a 10-time Pro Bowler. He's been to 2 Super Bowls. He led the Pittsburgh Steelers to the playoffs last year. And you could rip apart whatever you want to rip apart, but the fact of the matter, he's been uber successful and really, of his generation, one of the more successful quarterbacks in terms of success and winning games.
Yeah, I mean, and he certainly had a rough situation in Denver, and he got off to a...
And part of that was his own fault, by the way.
Of course, and he got off to a great start in Pittsburgh, and it sort of faded there, but he's been in these situations before, and I think that, you know, for him to come here at this point and to be a stabilizing factor is a great situation for him. And the Giants are just going to be very difficult because, you know, I don't love the Cowboys and where they're at, but they're still a team that could be very good. You've got quite possibly, you know, CBS Sports ranked the 2024 Philadelphia Eagles as the best team since 2000. You know, and they've lost some guys, but they always regenerate, like you're cutting an arm off of a starfish. They always figure it out there with Howie Roseman. You got a team that was in a NFC Championship game, for God's sakes, in the Commanders. So, I mean, you got 2 teams that were in the NFC Championship game in your division.
A lot can change in a year, though, I'm telling you. A lot can change in a week in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's a reoccurring theme for me. It's like, what is that team like when you are getting ready to play them? And, you know, certainly opening night against Washington, is Terry McLaurin going to be on the field?
Yes, he will be.
And where's his head going to be at?
Yeah, I mean,
is he going to get a new contract, and is everything going to be okay, and is he going to be happy with it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so every team deals with their own sets of issues. And, you know, and quite frankly, you got a year of tape on Jaden Daniels. It's probably one of the reasons why Abdul Carter is here.
Oh, for sure.
And that's when I asked Brian. I said, you know, can he doesn't want to compare him to Micah Parsons, but everybody's going to because they went to the same school, and he's the same kind of athlete.
Yeah, and I think that if he turns out to be the explosive player that he is supposed to be, coupled with what we saw from Malik Nabers next year, last year, I mean, that right there is a great foundation of young, excitable talents that are going to breathe life into this fan base that's just been completely dead for years now. So, I mean, and they've had some...
Well, they've been dead for 3 years. I mean, like, let's face it. I mean, like,
even prior to that, man. I mean, think of it. You could go back Pat Shurmur and freaking Joe Judge and Ben Mack. It's been a long time. Like, I understand they had the one playoff year, but really what that did was set them back more than it did propel them forward.
Well, as we sit here today, we can look back on that and say that exact thing because that is factual. But they also got decimated with injuries. And when you lose your quarterback, you know, 3 games into the season, 4 games, you know, all of a sudden you just don't have the backups that are going to be able to, unless you have an Andy Dalton or somebody like that, that is an insurance policy for 3 weeks and hopefully could lead your team to a 2-1 record while the starters, you know, undergoing treatments and trying to get back on the field. The Giants never had that.
No.
They have it now to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. You know, I think that when you look at the NFC as
yes.
compared to the AFC,
okay,
I can make a better case of a team sneaking into the playoffs with a wild card in the NFC.
I think you're going to get three. You remember how you were talking about three out of the AFC West for
yes.
the playoffs this year?
Yeah.
I think you might get three out of the NFC North.
Okay.
Detroit,
Lions,
Green Bay, and,
yeah.
and Minnesota.
Well, what about Chicago?
Well, I don't know. That's the thing. Those four teams, those are four really good teams. I assuming Caleb Williams is going to be able to understand what Ben Johnson is doing, and Ben Johnson handles him well. And, man, they've built a team around him. He's got playmakers around him. They spent money on the offensive line. I mean, it's all on him now, understanding Ben Johnson's offense and not throwing the killer interceptions.
It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network live from Giants camp from the traveling Built Ford Tough studio. You are hearing to the listening to the beautiful voice of the man who is sitting next to me. That is quarterback Jameis Winston, who showed up this morning with no shoes, bare feet. Are you a grounding guy, Jameis?
I'm a big grounding guy.
Big grounding guy.
And that's actually my jazz tunes.
That's your jazz tunes, yes.
That's the New Orleans in me.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's like Preservation Hall, that type of stuff. I mean, it's deep down in there. But, yeah, so the grounding, tell me about it. You like to have your feet on the grass and feet on the concrete and feel that stuff to get in the mood? Like, what is it about?
Yeah, it just eliminates inflammation and just allows you to be connected with the earth.
Hmm. Eliminates inflammation and allows you to be connected. Well, that's a good thing, yeah, I guess.
Inflammation.
Oh, inflammation.
Yeah. Oh,
I thought you said information.
Yeah. I was going to say,
the southern accent, I know it's sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have an accent up here, too, by the way. You know, so Gio here, my partner, was like so hoping that you were going to sign with the Giants.
Yeah.
Because you are the perfect personality for a team that has lacked major personality here. How has your experience been so far?
Well, I'm happy and grateful to be here. The quarterback room is amazing. Obviously, it's the greatest city in the world. But being in Jersey, getting acclimated to the Jersey culture is amazing as well. Just such great people and very open-minded people and straight to the point. So I really like that because there's no small conversations. They're going to tell you what they got to say, and then you go on from there.
All right, so when you say Jersey culture, what are the things that pop into your mind since you've been here about the New Jersey, New York culture?
One thing in particular is just they're straight to the point.
Yeah.
In the South, you know, sometimes we can be a little bit more lenient in our opinions, but a lot of Jerseyans, they tell you what's on their heart, and I really respect that and admire that. Obviously, the Italian culture, the Tommy DeVito's and everyone. Not being familiar with Jersey, I only experienced Jersey Shore, like from a perception of watching TV.
You like that show?
You know, I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
And that was only you know, the only thing I saw about Jersey.
Right.
But we're in North Jersey, so it's
so
a
you, so you're a big Snooki fan? Is that what you're telling us?
I forget the characters. I remember okay. Polly D. I think Snooki yep. was. I forget who she was.
Yeah, Jim Tan Laundry, GTL. That's a big thing around here.
Smooth.
So let me ask you. So you're now in your third spot, third different offensive system. I always tell Gio just how hard it is, no matter how old you are, to adapt to your new team, your new way of doing things, the way that they call plays, the way they call formations, things of that nature. How's that going for you?
Yeah, it's been pretty well. I think this offense is very challenging, but fortunately I was able to get some of it in Cleveland last year with Ken Dorsey and Coach Dabble having like that relationship in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So I know some of the concepts, just the verbiage. The verbiage is always the big thing in terms of communicating to guys, especially guys when you're in there with guys that don't necessarily know all the time. You got to be able to be clear and communicate effectively to those guys.
I always tell these guys that it's not easy, especially when the bullets start flying for real. Mm-hmm. When you're out on the field, the anxiety is high, and you're counting on people to be in one place, but they may not be in that place.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of indecision. It's not like when you were in New Orleans, you were playing, and you kind of knew what everybody was doing. You knew where the offense was headed, and you kind of felt comfortable. But now, all of a sudden, even for an older player, you're 30, right?
Yeah, 31.
31, okay. So you still have a lot of football left in you.
Yeah.
I mean, but the point being is that you have to relearn every single year, not only just an offense, it's also the players that you're playing with.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about being a leader and being a quarterback in football is just being able to take what's going on in the classroom and apply it over to the field. And as you see, when the bullets get going and everybody have to start executing at a high level, it really challenges, like, your studying habits and what are you doing to prepare, right? If you're not going out there with a plan and having your matchups that you really got preconceived in your mind, then you are already behind the eight ball.
You are behind the eight ball. I heard you give an interview the other day. You do know the difference between Idaho and Utah, right?
I do.
Yeah, okay, guys. Because you were talking about Taysom Hill and then Jackson Dart coming onto the field actually throwing a touchdown pass that probably should have been yours. That's the politics of the position.
Sure. What I was saying was Taysom Hill spent a lot of great time. Like, he's Idaho legend, and he's also a Utah legend.
I get it. Okay.
To BYU.
Yes.
So I was saying I'm used to quarterbacks from Utah, and I just gave him that Utah stigma because he went to BYU, and coming in and taking all my touchdown fame. But no, it's a blessing to see, because we were all young quarterbacks and we saw like those reps are required, you know, especially in the red zone. And Coach Daboll does a great job of putting us in high intensity chaos situations, because in those situations you have to be able to react. You not really react, you have to be able to respond the right way and still be poised and go out there and execute.
Talking to Jameis Winston live from Giants training camp on Boomer and Geo. Do you remember your first college start at Florida State?
I do remember that, yes.
Do you remember where it was?
It was in Pittsburgh, in Heinz Field at that time.
That's right. So I was working as the Pitt football sideline reporter for that game. It was Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. It was your first start ever. And on the sideline, you zip this pass like on a line, like 25-yard out to Kelvin Benjamin. And I was like, this is the real deal here, because we'd never seen you play at that point. Mm. And I remember that, and throughout your whole career, just like the arm strength and the I don't want to say reckless, because that's not fair, but just like aggressiveness. I'm going to throw this damn ball, and I'm just like, I want to make something happen. And I've always appreciated that about you. But like, how do you balance that? Because the famous line, I want God to deliver me from pick sixes. Like, how do you balance that aggressiveness now at this point in your career with trying not to make that big mistake?
Yeah, just focusing on decisions.
Yeah.
When you go out there and you accumulate, when you're looking at the course of a game, when you are 100% in decisions, then sometimes the turnovers are not there, and not focusing on the outcome. And it's funny that you say aggressive and reckless, because those are one of our terms in our quarterback room. Be aggressive, not reckless. And obviously, I like to take shots. I like to give guys an opportunity with the football. And this comes with the territory. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's about finding a way to win the football game. And when you win football games, none of the other stuff matters anyway.
You know, a friend of mine used to say, it's better to say whoa than sick 'em, meaning that I'd rather you go full balls to the wall and then have to bring you back, as opposed to, come on, throw the ball, don't be scared. You've never been scared to throw the ball.
Well, no, one of the most beautiful things about offense is that we know what we're doing. And I trust that I put enough preparation, I invest enough time in the guys, that when I say, hey, hey, it's third and seven. Hey, I'm coming to you. I know they're going to be in one robber. They're going to have outside leverage. I want you to attack his outside shoulder, break in, and give me leverage, and I'm going to put it on your bottom and protect you from the robber. But when you straight stem it, and then you run in, and I got my mind made up. Now I got to get off, and who knows what happened. You got Myles Garrett coming from the left side, and you got to avoid that tackle. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, man, like, where are we here? But it's being able to make those decisions. I was talking to Bill Belichick, and I asked him, you know, like, what was so great about Tom Brady? He just talked about he did not make he eliminated negative plays, and through the course of the game, if you're able to eliminate the negative plays, and there's going to be times where the play caller is right, and you know, and you're right on money and everything is perfect, but those times when everything is not perfect, you get a different look that you get that unscouted look that you've seen, is being able to just, hey, scratch that play and go on to the next play.
You know, he was also incredibly accurate, threw it away from the defender and his wide receivers or tight end in the case of Gronk or Randy Moss would go and get the football. And I'm just wondering, like, you see Malik Nabers out here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been around a lot of great wide receivers. Give me your impressions of him on the field now that you've been out there with him a few days, and the fact that everybody believes that he could be a top three receiver in this league. Is that true?
He's definitely capable of being the number one receiver in this league.
Wow.
Just because his physical prowess, like, when you be around him, like, he's thick, like, he is muscular, like, and the way that he moves is like he moves in a fluid motion, but he has the explosion to, like, go three more gears to track the ball, and he has strong hands and has the ability to separate. And I think in this league, when you're separating and you have 3 yards of separation on every reception, you know you're special, because that the area of separation is so, like, minimal. Like, sometimes you get it an inch, but he's consistently getting 3 yards of separation, so it allows you just throw it to the back of his head and he's going
to
receive it.
Which is great, because, you know, I was talking to Torrey Holt a couple days ago, who during his time with the Rams was one of the great route runners. Then comes Davante Adams, who is also known as a great route runner. And what does that mean about Malik Nabers? Is he that kind of player, or is he a little bit more like freelance?
Yeah, he's definitely that kind of player in terms of being specific with his route depth and how he gets open. But I think one of the most unique things that I've admired about him is just being sitting in the quarterback room and him just busting in the door, sitting in on our meetings, getting our perspective, learning how we want things ran, and even questioning us, like, hey, how do you want this to look? Like, do you want me to square in on this end cut, or do you just want me to roll in there? And being able, like, hey, man, if I see cover two, I might take my time. Like, he's explaining these type of things to us. And as a young guy, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, man, who your Rob receiver coach is? I said, who you getting coached by, man? Yeah. Because for you to have that type of football IQ as this being your second year in the league, I see why he has such great success his first year.
All right, let's talk about this real quickly, Gio. You know, you talk about your quarterback room. You love your quarterback room. You got your Tommy DeVito in there. You got your young kid, Jackson Dart, your young kid once, where you're trying to learn and everything's coming at you 100 miles an hour. But you also have a Super Bowl-winning quarterback in Russell Wilson. And, you know, he's been deemed the starter going into the season. I know you have a lot of pride. I know you want to play. How are you dealing with the aspect of knowing that he's going to be the starter? There is a future quarterback here in Jackson Dart. Where do you fit into this whole thing?
Well, one of the beautiful things about being in that position is, one, you get to learn from the Super Bowl-winning quarterback and just seeing his approach and how he plans every single day. But my main approach is to be a servant leadership, like servant leader in terms of serve those men in that room and prepare myself. Like, because in training camp, like, it's to each his own. You know, every rep that you get, it counts. And I'm focused on capitalizing and dominating those reps.
And last one for you, because I know you have to take off. We're actually going to talk to Russ coming up next. But I've always admired that about you. Number one overall pick. I mean, everything was, you were the guy for many years. And no matter what situation you found yourself in after that, you're there on the sideline, the best teammate, picking everybody up, slapping the hands. There's been a lot of guys who've been in your position, maybe been a backup in a spot where they thought they could have been starting, who would be sulking.
Could be a shift spot.
Right, exactly. Trying to get the other guy out of there. All you do is support your guys. I mean, at least from the outside looking in, I feel like you're genuine about it. I mean, that had to be hard at some point for you to, like, flip that switch and be like, I'm here for the team and not for me.
No, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to do what I love. And I love playing football. I love talking football. I love being around my teammates like this. This culture is a culture that you don't really get to experience. And when you hear wiser players like Boomer and stuff, what do they miss? They miss this team concept. They miss this atmosphere. And that's one thing that I admire, and that's one thing I love, and I take pride in serving my teammates and lean from that way.
Hey, did you enjoy? I saw you in the offseason doing a lot of interviews. Yeah. I mean, like, this is going to be your future, isn't it? I mean, you're going to be in TV somewhere, podcasting. But man, not yet. I mean, give it a few more years.
Yeah, man, my future, like you've been in multiple Super Bowls, and I want to feel that, man. I want to get in the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, and have that just be another thing that's on that accolade thing with this job.
Yeah, but you're good at the other side of it.
Yeah,
too,
I'm grateful. Like, but I like in the words of Beyonce, I woke up like this. Like this is what I love to do. I love to talk ball, man. But but my job, I'm required to reach the level that the greats reach, and that's win the Super Bowl.
Jameis, love having you here in New York, New Jersey, and it was a pleasure meeting you and talking to you today.
I appreciate you, Gio.
Jameis Winston, New York Giants quarterback.
Training camp in full force here, Jets and Giants. I agree with something J.J. Watt said. I don't know if you saw this over the course of the weekend, where he's like, dude, enough with these stats being a big deal from training camp stuff.
Oh, like 7-on-7s and completion percentage. It's such a waste of time.
But this has been going on for years, I guess since the age of social media, where, all right, reporters are out there and they're breaking it all down. It's just not for me. And maybe it is for some. I'm not a stats guy, period. But you think I give a crap about what's going on in training camp as far as numbers go? I mean, my God, it's gotten to a point where it's so overcovered and overhyped. Wake me up when the game starts. And by the way, even then, it's like week one, whatever, two, whatever, three, whatever. Like by week four, you start to, okay, now it starts to count. But I'm excited for football season, don't get me wrong, but the overdoing it in every second, scrutinizing every play of training camp, just to me is too much.
Well, especially training camp in 2025, where they haven't even, they're putting the pads on today, but where you can't even hit anymore. Like, you know, when Tiki was coming up, and obviously when Boomer was coming up, they were knocking the crap out of each other. Yeah. So maybe a little bit more transferable, like you get a better idea of what you had. I mean, I can't tell you how many tweets, and I used to get excited about it. Why wouldn't you? Oh, Zach Wilson, 5 for 5 in the red zone drill today. Looked phenomenal. Back shoulder throw to whomever. I gave up on that nonsense you a long time ago. What interests me from a Giant perspective is Dart. And I know that Dart threw a pick his first. That's why maybe you know, people reacted to that. But like Dart and the pass rush and the Giant issues, what interests me with the Jets is how Glenn commands the room and the early stages of getting this team into a disciplined, tough unit, the exact opposite of what Saleh had.
Yeah, which I love everything about that, but ultimately it's going to be about the results. Like, I've heard this before from other guys. I love it. Sign me up for everything that Aaron Glenn is about and everything that Aaron Glenn is saying. But we actually have to see it. Like, I've heard many coaches before say, we have to clean this up. We can't be undisciplined. We can't get penalties. I've heard it a million freaking times. And yet when we watch the games, what happens? Penalties left and right. So I want to see Glenn and his team execute what he knows takes to win football games. I believe in him. I believe in what he's saying. I believe what he's saying is true. I don't believe that the players are going to follow through and execute to the level that he expected to, especially soon, you know, right out of the gate. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that that's the case, and they're going to need that to be the case to have a successful season. But it's year one, blank canvas, you know, ground zero here with the Jets trying to build this new regime, new culture. I'm excited for it. I just need to see it to believe.
Understood. I mean, I'll tell you, the one thing that I do enjoy with the training camp and, you know, like Schrager would be out there and Kay Adams, like when they were with the NFL Network, I'm forgetting who
Kyle Brandt.
Kyle Brandt. That's what I was really looking for because he's still there. So like when you get a on-site report from people who don't have any allegiance to New York or the Jets that tell us, and I saw this over the weekend, that it's much more aggressive, that there's some yelling, and that, you know, it's stark contrast to what it was with Robert Saleh. That tells me there's an intensity, there's an urgency, which is appealing to me. And I got to read you this one quote. This is from Elijah Vera Tucker. And he says, quote, I can see this thing. What a diss. Now, I don't know if he really meant to do this, but it's what happened. I can see this thing turning around for sure, especially with Glenn, the type of coach he is. He praises physicality, but even more like accountability. And I think that that's very important for a head coach to do. That's something I haven't seen much of in my career.
Right. Okay. So that's damning against Robert Saleh.
Yep.
we all knew that about Robert Saleh. Like, I think Jet fans were hoping against hope, especially early on, you know, when they first hired Saleh. Oh, he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Badass. And yep. Here he goes. He's tough. No nonsense. And Glenn is saying all the right things, and it seems by all accounts he's running a tight ship.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see the results now. We have to see them execute. And yeah, back to your point about dart interception. Like, who cares? Same thing about Aaron Rodgers. Oh, first pass Rodgers threw as a steal was intercepted. Oh, okay. It's training camp. Like, it doesn't mean anything. I am fascinated to see how the Giants are going to play this thing with the quarterback, though. I know they're going to let Russell Wilson start.
Yeah.
But
what's your best guess? Give it to me, because I hit this when you were out.
Well, are they trying? See, the Giants got to pick a direction to me. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Are they trying to develop Jackson Dart, or are they trying to win games? I think they're trying to win games.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that doesn't happen, then maybe they'll say, okay, well, we're ready to go with Jackson Dart here. So I think it's going to be Russell Wilson's show. And I just don't know at what point are they going to say, okay, enough is enough with Russell Wilson. Let's go to Dart. If Russell Wilson gets banged up early on, it's going to be Jameis Winston.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be Jackson Dart. I wouldn't think you're going to see him for at least, you know, 10 weeks, 11 weeks. And then once the season is officially out of hand, which it will be, it may be sooner than later, then we'll start the, hey, here's Jackson Dart. But even if they start out, I don't know.
3-4, like get kind of hanging around.
No, I mean 3-4, that would be nice.
Good, three and exactly. Four for the schedule.
Let's say they start out 2-7.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think you're going to see Dart until the very end.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean?
I do agree. And I think it's an interesting road to try to navigate for them. We talked about this a little bit with the Yankees, but like winning versus development. And it's obviously much more pronounced for the Giants because they just have a one in a while. So they've got to thread that more delicately than the Yankees, who were in the World Series a year ago. I think Russell Wilson's going to be good. You know, not incredible, not horrendous, functional, a pro. I think he'll inspire a little bit, throw a couple, you know, shots downfield. I think to me, and I do think he'll play most of the season. I think the key is if it's really about development and also winning, why are you going to have Jameis Winston taking snaps away during practice from Dart?
Right.
To me, that's the angle that they've got to rectify and resolve. I said while you were out, I think before it's all said and done, I think Winston is eventually cut and they give him the respect.
At what point?
I don't know yet. I want to see.
Like before the season, you're saying? Or no?
Yeah. If Dart shows enough to be the backup, if he does. And again, I don't know that he has done that yet so far, but if he looks the part like, okay, he's physically ready not to play, but just to be the backup. You know, because that's 15, 18, 20% of the snaps that now you got to split between Winston and Dart. How is that getting Dart ready to play football?
It's not, which would make me think that he's a project that they're going to have in their back pocket, not at the forefront. I know he's going to be talked about quite a bit. I think the Giants' plan is clear. They are trying to win now with a defense that they believe is going to be great, with an offense that they think is going to be significantly better than what we've seen with Daniel Jones or whoever the last several years. Russell Wilson, and then if Russell Wilson, for whatever reason, doesn't have it or gets hurt, insert Jameis Winston, who's going to be able to move the football and score some points with this great defense. Dart is there less about now and more about the future. The problem is, I don't believe the Giants are going to win many games.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you know what's going to happen. It's already about Jackson Dart, let alone if they have a bad start. It's already all about Jackson Dart. So what happens when the Giants start slowly? The fans are going to be calling and clamoring on social media, wherever it may be, that they have their voice heard for Jackson Dart. And then there's going to be pressure to play Jackson Dart. Now, the Giants have to stay disciplined and not cave to that and stick to whatever their plan is.
Yep.
But that's easier said than done, especially if you're having a rough season. If they start 2-6, 2-7, I mean, they'd be lucky to keep their jobs, number one. But number two, it's going to be about, hey, you might as well get Jackson Dart in there and at least give the fans something to watch.
But they can't cave to that because then, you know, now their issue, even though they've got 2022 and a road playoff win, and I know Giant fans enjoy that, but the Giant fan, pardon me, the duo, I should say more, of Shane and Dable, they've got no equity within the fan base, or very little right now within the fan base. So if and when this thing gets off the rails, I think they'll be a little bit more competitive than you do, but we'll see. The temptation to placate fans who are going to be coming with pitchforks,
yeah, I know,
is going to be very hard to do. And when you talk about self-preservation, job security, that's where it could get really messy, though. But that's why you and I also talked about, was there some sort of an assurance from ownership? Hey, you know, just I'd have to think that there was some conversation that at least let Dable and Shane know it's about a little bit bigger picture than maybe our fans think, so don't do anything stupid or rush it. But you don't know if that assurance was given. We're just guessing.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Anthony in Harlem talking about the Jets. What's up, Ant?
Afternoon, boys. Good to hear you back together again.
Yeah, it's fun. Been 2 weeks, which is crazy. Go ahead, Ant.
Yeah, so, BT, I know you, like me, you're a diehard Jet fan. And two of the things in the last 2 years that have been absolutely mad about this team is they just got so many penalties, and yep. there was never any accountability.
Uh-huh.
And last year, they were an atrocious tackling.
Yep.
Terrible. And what makes me happy, it makes me think that maybe Aaron Glenn is going to turn this around. The first 2 weeks of training camp, he's got refs there.
I know.
Officiating practice.
That.
And
yeah.
today, Rosenblatt tweeted, the first day the pads were on, you know what they did? Full tackling drills to the ground. Said it was the most physical practice he's seen in years.
Let's go.
That makes me excited.
Love it. I love it. Well, I mean, listen, and I saw that over the weekend as well. Thanks for the call, where apparently the officiating was taken out of the Jets' budget last year.
Come on.
Good God, Woody. Now, he did pump in $25 million for the locker room, but that was a reaction to the D-plus that the Jets organization got. I mean, how much are these guys making? I mean, the franchise is worth $1 billion, basically. You nickel and diamond refs during July in Florham Park for a team that has no sense of how to play? So they're going to hit each other. They're going to tackle. And when they do something sloppy, either because they're tired or because they're not buttoned up fundamentally, here comes a flag, and that's how you get better. I love it.
Like I said, I don't think I would ask for anything better. If you're a Jet fan right now, this is exactly what
yep.
you want.
Yep.
Work in the weeds.
No drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's
right.
Let's go. I'm here
Have
for
a
it.
Head coach, no-nonsense guy, disciplined, hard-ass, bringing the refs. It sounds great. It's all perfect. They just have to go out there and execute. And, man, do I hope they do. Because if they do, that'll be a fun team to watch and a team to get behind, regardless of the results or the sex appeal of whatever type of offense they have. Just a team that plays the game hard and the right way is something we could get behind. All right. So that brings us to some football stuff here. Jordan Renan, I saw him tweet a little while ago, BT, that Malik Nabers apparently went down with a shoulder injury at Giants training camp. He went to the this is from Renan's tweet. Nabers went into the Giants field house with the head trainer, Ronnie Barnes, then came outside, gave Dable the update. Nabers did not return to practice. He appears done for the day. So I don't know how significant this is, but it appears Nabers suffered a little bit of a shoulder issue today at training camp.
Yeah, and I know Connor Hughes is out there as well, and Connor tweeted, I guess he had a couple of issues. One is the shoulder, and Connor also had Nabers banged up during team drills at Giants practice, down for a moment, then he walked off himself dealing with a toe injury. Mm. We'll see if he comes back. And then a later separate tweet from Connor is he did not mention shoulder, but it said he was taken back to the locker room with trainers, got banged up during team drill. So either Connor thought it was a toe and it was the shoulder, which is possible. There's a lot of bodies out there, or the toe is a little bit jacked up and the shoulder. To what extent, nobody knows, but this is I got to tell you.
I should say Hoff told me it was the shoulder from other stuff that he saw. In the Jordan Renan, he did not mention shoulder, so I just don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, so we're piecing this together. Yeah. Bottom line is it's not great when your superstar receiver, you know, has to leave a drill. Doesn't seem like it's season-altering, but, you know, I don't know, and hopefully it's not. But this is the worst part of being a football fan.
Training camp?
It's not even August 1st, and what guy, for a second day with Justin Fields, now he's okay. Now, I'm not saying Justin Fields is Aaron Rodgers when Aaron was 25 years of age, but he's the quarterback for the season.
Starting quarterback, yeah, it's a problem.
It's tough, man. There's so many injuries and, you know, the Achilles and the knees and the patellas and the other ligaments and tendons and shoulders and wrists. These guys, they deserve every penny.
And that's the bottom line. Right, they should have deep contracts.
Yeah.
And the only thing for me from camp, like I can't get into, we discussed this yesterday, I can't get into the, oh, he threw an interception, oh, he was 7-for-7 on team drills, like I don't care. Oh, he led the team in the 2-minute drill down the field and scored a touchdown. I don't care. Jackson Dart, Justin Fields, doesn't matter. I want to see them do it in real game time. The only thing for me from camp that is of any relevancy is health. So, yeah, when you hear the Justin Fields thing, it's a scare because that's your starting quarterback. He goes down, you're screwed right out of the gate.
Yep.
If it's Malik Nabers and you imagine him, whatever, even if it's not worst-case scenario, but he's banged up and misses a few weeks in the beginning of the year, that's a problem for the Giants. So, as it would be with other teams with their, you know, premier players. So, health is the most important thing for me from training camp. That's the only thing I want to hear about. The only thing I care about is the health of these players.
Yeah, the stats to me are completely insignificant, but the one thing I do put a lot of emphasis on this. Now, it doesn't apply to every team to every season, But like, and more so for the Jets because it's Aaron Glenn's first year. But I think it was Kay Adams. Somebody was out of Jets camp. She might even be there again today. I don't know. But she was out there yesterday, I believe. And she said there's a lot of juice. And others have said that too.
Yeah.
That there's detectable, like palpable juice with the Giants. And it didn't quite feel that way. So, you know, I not that it translates to wins. But if there's spirit, if there's energy, that's a good sign. Again, the stats mean nothing. And then from the Jets perspective, you know, the fact that they're hitting. I mean, they were going through some old school drills yesterday. And then Aaron Glenn talked about that. He's like, we've got to learn to tackle. We've got to make these players uncomfortable. He's brought the referees back. We talked about that yesterday.
Love it.
So, like, those things I could extrapolate from a training camp practice much more than stats. But the injuries are number one.
100%. Love to hear that. Also, the counter would be, and I said this yesterday, it sounds great. Now we actually got to see it go out there and have them execute in games. And by the way, it doesn't mean that they have to win all these games. Like, this is how pathetic we are in New York football. I just want to see some competitive football games for the first few months of the season. Is that too much to ask?
No. This year, I don't think it is, actually. Like, I think last year it was. I don't think this year.
With both teams, it was too much to ask.
That's what I'm saying.
With both teams, they should at the very least be competitive, right? You think Russell Wilson, I don't love him, but can the Giants at least move the football? It shouldn't seem like an impossibility to score a touchdown. Those things happen. When you watch football games outside of New York, teams score points. Teams score touchdowns. The Jets and Giants have not done their share in scoring touchdowns in recent years. So I'd like to just see some competitive football where each team actually has a chance to win a game or two in the first few months.
I mean, I agree. We're all waiting for this. I'm excited for the season. It's so long away or so far away. I think the Steelers game to me is a winnable game. I mean, Steelers, I've got great respect for their franchise. You know, their roster's okay. You know, Mike Tomlin's been under fire. Aaron Rodgers is 41. Getting his ass, honestly. Yeah. Chase him around the field. Hammer him from, tackle him from behind. And really, make him show his age.
Look, dude, I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. I think Rodgers is going to get some payback.
The hell out of here. Not against us. He's not. I think the Jets are going to smoke him. He's an old man.
I think Rodgers is going to get some payback week one. Man, that is going to be. Talk about the storylines. Week one, right out of the gate.
Either way, the storyline's there. Because if he lights up the Jets, that's one thing. If he plays poorly, now the Aaron Glenn era is off to a good start. The other thing, too, quickly about. He very well might throw a couple touchdowns. I don't know. Although I do think it's only a 3-point spread. So Vegas is saying the Jets have a pretty good chance
Steelers
to win this
favored
game.
By three,
Steelers lane three on the road. Okay. So it's really Steelers by 5.5, whatever. On a neutral site or in Pittsburgh. I love the fact, again, this is just early training camp stuff, but we all love football. The early signs, hey, Sauce Gardner, you are, wherever their best receiver is, you're traveling.
Yeah.
You're following.
Good, and let's see what he can do. Let's see what he can actually do this year. You're right. It's the best way they should use him. That's how the top paid corner should be used. Mm-hmm. You're not playing one side of the field. Let's go, big boy. Yep. Get on their best guy.
And he wanted to in his defense.
Okay, good. Now let's see him shut him down. I don't even see the interception numbers.
Yeah.
I could do without the dropped interceptions that you should catch that mm-hmm. I can catch.
Yeah, one against Dallas. Yeah. It would have been a pick six 2 years ago.
The one against Minnesota in London was a disaster.
Yep, yep.
Set the thing off the wrong way. But yeah, let's see. So I can't wait. That's a huge storyline as well, seeing if he can live up to the expectations for once. All right. We'll get back to the football stuff, get back to the calls here. But before we do that, BT, there are two tweets from Mark Feinsand, baseball reporter.
Baseball stuff. Mark's good. I like Mark. What do you got? He's more Yankee-oriented, right?
Ryan Helsley, he used to be, but I think now it's just in general, MLB in general. Ryan Helsley, one of the most popular trade targets with no less than a half dozen teams. Interested among the suitors for Helsley, and obviously for the Cards.
Cards, yep.
Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Phillies, Rangers, and Blue Jays. So
okay.
Yankees and Mets bolted on him. And one more.
You're not getting him for, your 37th prospect. I mean, you got six teams who are trying to win a World Series. You're going to have to give something up big time.
He's going to command a lot.
I know.
That's a big time arm. That's one that I want either the Mets or the Yankees to get. And then find Sam one more on Luis Robert Jr. He's on the radar of several teams, including the Mets. Center fielder struggled to play for the past two seasons, but his past 6 weeks he's been on fire. And he goes into some of the numbers. I don't need to give you that, but it's at least there's more legitimacy to it, other than just doing the Mets being like, hey, here's a center fielder who might be available. I think the Mets are going to go big game hunting here, like big time, trying to really improve themselves at the trade deadline.
But you know they're going to get another arm in the bullpen.
Yeah, but
you know
I want a big one.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, that would be the big one. Bednar from the Pirates.
What is he, 12 for 12 saves? Pitching very well.
Yeah, he's been an all-star.
I know. Some good arms out there, dude.
Yeah, BT and Sal on the fan. Brad is in Mineola. What's up, Brad?
Hello, what's up, guys? How are you?
Good.
All right, so the reason why I say Suarez over Robert and that's my thought, is that I believe that more comes back with Suarez than it does Robert. If it's like a one-for-one or it's like, let's say, Acuna and someone else for Robert, I'm cool with it. Seeing Vientos yesterday just basically brought me back to the playoffs, and it's very hard to even think about getting rid of him. But obviously, at this point, every season is its own season. And right now, the Mets are like one or two moves away from being the number one contender to win the whole thing. So you got to do what you have to do. But in my opinion, getting Suarez and getting a guy like Zach Gallen, or possibly getting Shelby Miller, even though he's injured, or Kevin Ginkle, who was having an off season, but he, the last 2 years, was lights out. I think you get more from Arizona than you do from Chicago. I want to know your thoughts about that.
I would prefer Robert myself, and thank you for the call. And the reason why, Brad, is because he's a better fit. He's a center fielder.
Yep.
Suarez is appealing, sure. He's also just a specific rental, which I'm not opposed to, and I wouldn't mind getting one of the pitchers back. But I would rather get Robert in center field and live with Mauricio at third than I would live with McNeil and Taylor in center field and get Suarez at third.
I agree with that. You know what I mean? I totally agree with that, yes.
Dude, you bat Mauricio ninth?
Yeah.
He's going to be solid defensively. He's got the potential to be a star offensively.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not worried about third base right now with the way that Mauricio has shown. And worst case, you could go back to Beatty, assuming that you do trade Vientos. But at least they have some options there, whereas they need a center fielder.
Yeah, I was just looking for this when you were speaking, too. You know, the x-rays look like they came back favorably for Suarez.
Yeah.
But I guess there's still some internal concern. Like, he was going to maybe miss a little bit of time. Nothing broken. So that's good, but, you know, that is a tough time to get hit in the hand. What do you got there, Hoffy?
You breaking news here, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty big, actually, because Boone just was on with the guys from...
John Boy, yeah. Talking Yanks.
Luis Gil's going to go 75 pitches today. If all goes well, he's starting this weekend versus the Marlins.
There you go. Okay, so the decision for the Yankees, and Susan and I talked about this, and I talked to Boone about this a while ago when I was asking him about Gil this months ago. And the decision for the Yankees was, do we stretch him out that last start down there, or do we do it up here? And we have our answer. So one more start, 75, call them up.
And then he's going to pitch this weekend.
And he's going to pitch this weekend for the Yankees. So
Freed tonight for the Yanks.
Yeah, make sure that blister's okay. Freed has not been very good the last five or six starts. The numbers are very different.
Right. I'm just trying to go over the rotation here in my head.
Rodon.
Right.
Will Warren has not been very good lately.
Stroman has been god-awful.
Stroman's terrible.
Schlittler last night.
Good stuff. I trust him.
So what do you do with Heel back in the rotation? Stroman out, or is it Schlittler out, I would think? You're not going to move Warren, right?
He has not been as I liked him the first. I still like him. He's got a lot of strikeouts, but he's been getting knocked around. I don't know that he's cemented there.
Right.
I think I'd rather, honestly, Sal, I'd rather have Schlittler right now than Warren pitching as a starter.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you have Freed, Rodon, Heel once he comes back.
Yep.
Then you're gonna have to fill out the next two. So who are you gonna go?
I would go with Schlittler in there,
and then it's gonna be Stroman or Warren.
Who's better equipped to come out of the bullpen? I would say probably Warren, because he averages about 10.5 strikeouts per nine.
Oh God, you keep
and Stroman doesn't.
I know, but you keep Stroman in the rotation. Woof.
I don't like Stroman. I don't think he's very good.
The Yanks
anymore.
Might need another arm. Yeah, he's
I know.
I hated the signing to begin with.
I didn't mind it early, but now I don't know why he's back.
Yeah, but either way, it's going to be Hoff, stay on that. See if Booney says anything with the talking Yanks guys with John Boy and Jake.
Especially about Spencer Jones. I know that they asked him. I'm curious what he says about that.
I don't know if he's going to have a good answer on that, you think?
He's got to have an answer.
Well, about calling him up.
You're calling him up, Skip?
I was more thinking about trading. So, yes, calling up Spencer Jones and also how he would plan to fill out that rotation, because I would be curious to see if they're going to stick with Schlittler and what they would do with the other spot in that rotation. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan.
We are back from Giants camp on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, and we are joined by the man that every Giant fan is praying will be the next great franchise quarterback in the history of this franchise, and that is Jackson Dart. Jackson, great to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you guys for taking the time.
I'm not going to beat around the bush. What week are you making your first NFL start?
Shoot. Oh, God. Coming out hot, huh?
Going week 11, week 12? What are we thinking?
Hold on, Jackson. Yeah. He's a Jet fan.
Is he?
Yeah. So you don't have to answer him.
But every Giant fan wants that answer.
Should I even answer that question?
You shouldn't.
From a Jets fan, I don't know.
You shouldn't.
You know, quite honestly, I'm coming out each and every day just trying to get better.
There's a lot of things from as a rookie quarterback that you got to continue to learn and improve on each and every day. So, quite honestly, I'm just trying to stick to my daily habits, stick to my daily process, and be the best teammate, best supporter, encourager. Try to raise the standard of everybody around me and push everybody. You know, when we compete at the highest level. So, we got a lot of great players here, a lot of great quarterbacks. It's been a pleasure to be in this room, and you know, whenever that comes, you know, I just. Right now, I'm trying to take it day by day.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because when you got drafted and it was all set what the quarterback room was going to look like,
yeah.
I think our conversation was, man, this might be the most interesting QB room in the NFL.
It is. It's
Russ
unique.
And
yeah.
Jameis and obviously Tommy as well. Yep. How has that been? Just the dynamic, not the X's and O's of it, but just the relationship in there.
Yeah.
Because it's heavy.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's just – it's been, like, really special to be in that quarterback room. Obviously, you know, when you come in as a rookie, you don't really know what to expect, especially when you have, you know, older guys who have played and had a lot of success. So I try to come in with just having the mindset of just trying to learn. And I think that, you know, I have a unique opportunity to play with three guys really, but, you know, Jameis and Russ who have played,
right.
you know, long in
right.
this league and have won a championship. You know, Jameis at one point was leading the league in touchdowns. So, I just have a unique opportunity to learn from those guys, and it's been a pleasure to be in that room and those guys to coach me up each and every day. Like, you know, I go out and do my plays, and I'm able to come back, you know, behind me and talk to those guys, and they're able to go over everything with me. And I think that when I'm able to get on-field coaching from my coaches, but also get it from their lens too, like it's a special opportunity.
Does Shea Tierney have any air in that room? Can he talk at all?
I mean, Shea talks about it all the time. Like, he's got to come ready every single day because, you know, the guys in there are just so smart. I mean, Tommy knows the system better than anybody because he's played in the longest. But, like, each and every day, like, there's a lot of questions being asked, and it's just a lot of positive cooperation with guys asking, you know, why we do things, wanting to see it from their lens. And it's cool to see, you know, Russ and Jameis being able to play in different offenses and then come here and have an open mindset to things, and then at the same time be able to pick up coaching and make it translate to the field.
Right. Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Does it feel like a lot?
Initially, I felt like I was swimming a little bit just in the information because it's different from college. You don't get as many reps. You don't have as much time, you know, practice-wise. So, you know, initially, yeah, I was swimming a little bit. But I feel like I've been able to slow things down, especially these last, you know, several days. And I think that will just continue to happen the more reps and you know, time that I have in this offense.
So when I came out here a couple weeks ago, right when you guys were just starting, and I was just talking about – I hadn't met you yet, but I was talking to Paul Dottino about Dabes. And he was like, Dabes is all in his hip. Like, he's next to him the whole time. How has Dabes been with you? Because obviously we know what his reputation is with up in Buffalo with Josh Allen and grooming young quarterbacks. How has he been with you?
Incredible. You know, his intensity of how he coaches everybody on the field is, you know, what I like to play for. My dad was like that. You know, my dad was the hardest
coach
on me.
Yeah,
growing up. So I kind of compare it to that of just, you know, the intensity, the passion behind everything. And I think it's just special when you're able to have a coach who just really enjoys and wants to coach you each and every play, each and every series, situationally. And I think that I've just been blessed to be in this situation to be able to play under him.
Acting the same way to you when there was that recruitment of, we may draft you, we're learning about you. I was curious, because Dabes feels like a hard ass. Is he that same hard ass during the whole we may or may not draft you phase of the relationship?
I mean, he wanted to see what I was about, so he definitely challenged me. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the clips of me in the meeting room, and that's just a small portion of it. But yeah, those are intense, you know, and he wants to see, you know, what kind of player you are, what kind of person you are, how you're able to overcome adversity and feel uncomfortable but still be able to make things work. So it's definitely been intense, but I think that when you can see that there's a relationship that comes from, you know, it's very genuine, then you're able to get through it.
Could you tell he liked you? Like one of those kind of dating things. Like, could you tell he's grilling you? He's learning about you, but boy, he likes you. They can't wait to pounce and draft you.
Nah, I had a feeling. Yeah. I had a feeling for a while.
When did you know? When did you, like? Because nobody. I mean, we were speculating all the, you know, all the weeks leading up to it, but we had no idea.
Right.
It was my ideal draft, by the way, Abdul Carter and then Jackson Dart. Just for the record. But when did you know that they were moving up and going to get you?
I had a feeling like a few weeks before, kind of when they came out for, you know. You know, my pro day and whatnot, but you never know.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things, that can happen. You know, there's a lot of teams trying to, you know, shuffle in the mix and make things happen as well. So you didn't know how things were going to exactly play out, but, you know, I was really hoping that it was going to be here.
Yeah. What was your expectation of New York? Just in general, being a football fan growing up, obviously playing college at a high level, you know who the Giants are. You know what their reputation is. You know some of the struggles we've been going through for the last decade or so.
Yeah.
But what was your what did you expect when you got drafted here?
I mean, I was just excited to play on the biggest stage. Like I said, when I was on my visit here, you know, they asked me, you know, what's your reason? Why would you want to play here? And I said, as a competitor, you want to play on the biggest stages in front of the best and most passionate fans, mm-hmm. in front of the biggest city. I mean, I go to bed every night and I can see the city. So there's a lot of things that just get me excited about this place. And, yeah, there's been some roller coasters in this organization the past few years, but I think there's a ton of optimism and there's a lot of hope, especially with the young talent and the veteran leadership that we have going into this season. So, you know, in my idea is I didn't really know what to expect, right. But I just wanted to play on the biggest stage.
You're a Utah kid. First round pick, New York City. Evan's team, the Jets, has lived this with Zach Wilson. Have you spoke to Zach at all about that transition and kind of living that life and coming to New York?
Yeah, so my pops and Zach's dad played at Utah together in college. So we had that relationship, and then I transferred to the high school that he played at for my senior year.
Did you beat all his records?
Yeah, I beat him. Zach's a great player, but I beat him. No, but, you know, I was able to kind of see Zach's experience, and he was great with me just, like, opening up on the things that that he learned from. And, you know, I think for me, I also had the special chance to play in L.A. at a high school. Then I was able to go play in the best conference in the SEC, mm-hmm. in college. So I just feel like it's just been stepping stones.
Well, it's funny. The first thing I said to you is, when are you going to play? I remember not arguing, but talking with Tiki 2 weeks ago, how learning from Zach Wilson, I wouldn't play you this year. I think it would be such a great experience to learn from Jameis Winston, from Russell Wilson. And sometimes young quarterbacks get rushed. Zach Wilson was rushed.
Right.
Do you think, sitting for a year, as frustrating as that may be, do you think that could benefit you long term, just not actually playing in your rookie season and learning from these guys?
Look, like I said, I think I have a special opportunity to be in the room with those guys and just continue to learn from them and take their wisdom and their coaching, you know, from a coaching standpoint to the players that are around me. I've never sat, you know, even when I was in high school, like I started as a freshman. So it's going to be different, you know, initially just going into it. But, you know, what I care about is winning. You know, I don't care what role you're in. If you're the starter, if you're the backup, if you're the third string, if you're a P squad, if you're losing, it ain't fun. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me, I'm trying to be the best teammate. Like I said earlier, be an encourager, compete with everybody, and, you know, try to keep an open mind to, you know, just trying to learn and be process driven each and every day.
Are we still using the clap snap count?
No.
It's gone?
It's gone.
You can't do that.
No clapping. No clapping.
Now, I don't know if these guys know, but I was doing research on you when they were looking to draft you, and I was intrigued by your third base skills. Yeah. Baseball player here, Jackson. Are you aware of this?
Yes, sir.
So what happened? Like, did you just give it up for football? Take me through your baseball career and how damn good you were.
I'm confident in the player that I was in baseball, and I got way more attention early on for baseball, but football was always my favorite.
Okay.
You know, I had some opportunities coming out of high school to go play some, you know, big time ball in baseball, but, you know, I was just really hoping that things were going to pan out my senior year, and I was able to ride with football and get a few more opportunities. But, you know, when you go into Yankee Stadium and you watch a game, it definitely makes you miss it a little
so
bit.
So you are a Yankee. You're going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
You're going to be a Yankee fan or a Met fan?
I've been a Yankee fan since I came out of the womb.
Really?
Are you frustrated, Brian Cashman, at the deadline?
Thank you. Thank you.
Don't do that.
Yeah. I told you he was a Jet fan. He's also a Met fan.
He's trolling, huh?
Well, good luck, man. Best of luck this season. We do appreciate you coming on, and Giant fans are excited to see you. They're counting down the days until they get to see their franchise quarterback.
Let me ask you this one more time. You've met them because they've been here. I saw Phil a couple of days ago. Eli's obviously always around here. They're Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. Yeah. When you think about what the history of quarterbacks are and with the New York Giants, where do you vision yourself in that pantheon? Can you see yourself climbing there? Are you visioning that at some point?
Oh, absolutely. You know, my goal was never just to get here. I want to be the best, and I want to play at the highest level and succeed and win the biggest games. So, you know, first thing, I think it's incredibly special when you see, you know, Super Bowl winning quarterbacks who hang out around the facility even after they retire as much as they do. So it's been great to interact with those guys, and they've been open to, you know, questions and advice. So it's definitely a special, you know, place to be when you see that around here.
Good.
Thank you, Jackson. We appreciate it, man.
Like yourself, too. Everybody's around here.
Thank you.
It's fun.
Jackson Dart, quarterback, New York Football Giants. We got more coming up here from Giant Training Camp.
Right at 5 o'clock on a trade deadline Thursday, 1 hour away before the deadline is official. Now, the Yankees have been stuck in a rain delay for a while. They were on the AM side leading Tampa Bay 7-4. They had a 7-0 lead. Rays came back. It's 7-4 bottom of the fifth inning, and even though the game is official, baseball wants to finish the game.
Of course.
We've had a very rainy, weird day. The rain has cleared in the Bronx, so a 5:20 first pitch, a rescheduling, if you will, to restart this game in the bottom of the fifth inning is scheduled. The way it'll work is we'll still be here on the FM side. If you want to hear the Yankees, it'll be on the AM side. If you're currently listening to us on the AM side, you're going to get the Yankees at 5:20. If you want to hear more of us, the trade deadline, the Giants stuff, flip on over to 101.9 or the Odyssey app. So that's what's going on right now with the Yankees. I hope I'm wrong because I'm not a hater, Teak. This game feels like a Yankee loss.
Oh, stop. It felt like that after the fourth inning when Marcus Stroman, for some reason, couldn't throw strikes or get outs. And all of a sudden, a 7-0 lead turned into a 7-4 lead. And luckily, the pain stopped with the rain delay. But, I mean, don't say that. It feels that way, to be honest with you.
I'm not saying it as a hater. I'm saying it because this is baseball. Mm-hmm. You sat there for 2 hours thinking, oh, if the game's rained out, it's a Yankee victory. Yeah, it's an official game.
And who comes back and is pitching is, and you know, because I forgot who went into the rain delay pitching for the Yankees. It was a reliever, wasn't it?
No, I think it was just
Marcus Stroman.
Stroman finished, I think,
he was probably coming out of the game anyway, obviously, and certainly now will after a long rain delay. But bottom line is they still need to find a way to get 12 outs, and the lead is 7-4. Now, luckily, when the game resumes, the Yankees have first and third with one out, so they've got a chance to score more runs. But funnily enough, a word.
Who's
but
on?
Like
Stanton and Jazz are on?
What was that?
Stanton and Jazz are on base?
Yeah, yeah. Stroman pitched 5 innings, and his pitch count was 74. So the odds were he was probably done anyway. But, yeah, they got to find a way to get 12 more outs. Now, we are at Giant Camp. You'll hear from Malik Nabers and Abdul Carter in a little bit. The window seat to Giants training camp is sponsored by Windorama's First Down Deals, 30% off your installation project. The excitement is about Abdul Carter. Mm. And what I'm curious about, because when you come into this league drafted as highly as he was drafted, all the reviews that we're getting from people that have watched training camp, you guys were all here early watching him, is that this is a no-doubt-about star. What are your early impressions of Abdul Carter on the Giants right now?
Well, he is explosive, and he has a pedigree, that linebacker/edge U that Penn State has become, and you see it. He doesn't speak very loudly. He's a man of few words, but he does it with his play. And the beauty of it is that he's not going to have to come in and carry this team. He's not got to be the guy who goes and gets 15 sacks in year one in order for the Giants' defense to be impacting opposing teams' quarterback. He already has Brian Burns there, Kayvon Thibodeau, who had his fifth-year option picked up, interestingly, right after they drafted Abdul Carter. So there's a plan for all three of those guys, which makes it somewhat exciting when you think about the depth that the Giants have in the rush room.
This is a Giant team, and we all fall for this trick. I heard Gio this morning. He fell for it, too, and he knew he was going to fall for it. Mm. And that is when we come to camp, we get optimistic.
Well, there is an optimism here. I feel it.
I agree. And so I'm going to admit to you, as we sit here late in the day, I feel the optimism. And the other thing I feel, which we all knew, but you see it, is this is just a more talented roster.
Of course.
Like, top to bottom. I think my fears remain the same, which is more about where are they getting wins from, mm-hmm. than it is that this is a broken franchise or a broken team.
Yeah, well, they were young, as Joe told us in the interview that we just aired with him. But I think they also didn't have a lot of depth. So they were young and didn't have depth.
Right.
So as soon as they sustained even a little bit of injury on the offensive line or elsewhere in the second levels, it became impossible for them to put a competitive team on the field. It's different this year. You're seeing like actual competition happening in certain places. You see it in the defensive backfield with Deontay Banks and Cordell Flott battling over who's going to be the starting cornerback opposite of Paulson Adebo. You're seeing it on the offensive line. Evan Neal is getting some run at starting right guard with Jake Kubas, with Van Roten out because of, I think he's on paternity leave. His wife's about to have a baby. And so he's getting a real opportunity. And one of the things you're hearing is that Evan Neal is
probably the most talented physical guard that they have.
We trust him?
He doesn't know what he's doing yet.
Right.
Right. At least not on the professional level. He did play guard a little bit when he was in college, but it's just a matter of getting him up to speed, comfortable, confident, and trustworthy in that position. Because let's be real, he wasn't trustworthy at tackle.
No.
And half the time, I didn't even know if it was on him.
Right.
It felt like it was, what's he being coached to do? Because there were, I mean, how many times do we see this? He's just standing there.
Right.
Nobody around him, not moving, just kind of waiting for someone to come to him.
He became a meme last year.
He became a meme because it looked like he didn't know what he was doing. And so this is an opportunity for him that he is, I think, embracing now to resurrect his career as a guard. We've seen this happen before. Right, we saw it with your former player,
Mekhi Becton.
Yeah. We saw it with a former Giant,
Eric Flowers. But you know what the difference is, Teak, and it's an interesting difference. Eric Flowers and Mekhi Becton resurrected their careers at a different position
on a different team.
It's true. Evan Neal, and I almost think Evan Neal's in a tougher spot because when Mekhi Becton goes elsewhere, he's no longer a bust. Mm-hmm. When Eric Flowers goes elsewhere, he's no longer a bust. Evan Neal. It's just the reality. He has to live with Giant fans saying, oh, that's Evan Neal. He's a boss.
But all you got to do is be good.
I agree.
As simple as that.
Just be good, and it doesn't matter. Become a suitable starting guard in this league, and we'll be like, all right, fine.
What a plot twist that would be. To have a guy that you declared a bust, and then you fall in love with him again? He was calling fans hamburger flippers 3 years ago. Now we could be back in love with him.
Well, it's going to take a while before you're in love with him. But one person I do know you're in love with, and I want to thank SNY because they did catch this, and we will air it whenever they're able to, maybe tomorrow, is that after we were done interviewing Jackson Dart, Sean thought the cameras were off and repeated out loud, I love him. And so we have it. So we can see Sean Morash over and over again declare in such a real moment, because it's not for the cameras, it's not for the radio. He didn't even know. It's like a private moment.
Man crush.
Well, hold on. The truth is, I will admit this. I watched a ton of Jackson Dart Ole Miss. I was skeptical, and there's a reason he wasn't picked in the top five. Mm-hmm. I pounded the drum for Shador Sanders. Didn't have the guts to tell Jackson Dart that earlier, but... When he approaches us today, comes up, shakes our hand, there, when everybody says there's a way a guy carries himself, I don't think I fully understood what that meant until today when I met Jackson Dart. That is a different aura of a guy. I hope the play matches that, but it was hard not to love and envision yourself in the next 15 years, waking up on Sundays going, we have a chance to win today because Jackson Dart's playing quarterback. That's the feels and vibes I got.
I am not ripping Jackson because he was a wonderful young man. I like Jackson Dart. Seems like a good guy. This is the kind of the allure sometimes of when you show up at training camp. You meet the guys. They're so nice. They make you believe.
Yeah.
Now, he's got to execute this on the field.
No doubt.
He's got the talent to do it.
What? He doesn't have to do anything yet.
You're right. That's a good point.
It is Russell Wilson's job.
In fact, and I've said this and said it on the air so far today, I think it's ideal that he doesn't play this season. Mm-hmm. Said that to him. But eventually, is what I mean, whether it's next year or the year after, he's got to become the guy. Because Jackson Dart, and here's the reality of a young quarterback taking this high. The reality is, you are either going to be effing beloved the way Eli turned out to be, or Zach Wilson. I just say his name in the motions, or Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you end up leaving here either. It's one of two things.
Right.
Beloved as a hero, or like a piece of garbage. And it's unfair.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel right, but go through every first round pick, mostly Jets, but some Giants. Obviously, we've had more quarterback shots than you. And it all ends the same way.
And it's interesting that you, because it's not necessarily the free agent quarterback that comes here. Because think about Kerry Collins. I don't think Kerry Collins is one way or another. It's probably more loved than it is hated.
Right.
Because he never did anything bad here.
It's
the drafted high player that you care about, because that's the one that, again, it's not even our asset. It's just kind of what the team decides to do on draft day.
You're right.
But we consider it like something they took from us and put into this kid. And if it doesn't work out, well, damn you. What the hell? Like, and so I feel like Jackson Dart has the persona to be a really good player in this city in particular, because he's charismatic. You know, I always talk about this. We talked about this right before the draft and why I felt that Shador Sanders was falling in people's draft boards.
Right.
And a lot of it was because of how he presented and how he, you know, would be in front of a camera answering the questions that all starting quarterbacks get asked. He was rough around the edges.
And
he was brash, a little bit too cocky at times. Jackson Dart will handle every question the right way.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Absolutely.
You can hear it in how he answers questions. You can – the respects he pays to whoever's asking that question and just his delivery. And so has nothing to do with what you do on the field, but it is an important part of being a franchise quarterback.
Absolutely. Big part of it.